God. Thank you, Lord, that you have lifted us into your presence, drawn us, brought us to be one with you. Oh, glory to your holy.
Evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Of course, our call telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this Bill Sardi, and I think we're going to be talking about the avian influenza this evening. Now, many of the people I know and respect really believe that we have a real potential problem from avian influenza. Myself, I think we're being hyped by the controlled media, and they're creating fears for obvious reasons. There's an agenda. I've never seen anything quite like this. And if you stop and think that the chances of you're getting hit by lightning in the United States and killed is about 160 every year. 160 Americans will get hit by lightning and killed every year. How many Americans have died of avian influenza? And as you're going to learn this evening, why this the virus has been around since 1959. It's certainly been people had it. It's in 1997, 98, somewhere in there, but. Thing is that I think we should be prepared. I think we should be prepared because there are lots of things that could happen. We live in a very uncertain world. But with that as the background, Bill Sardi, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you. And, of course, this flu story won't go away. It seems like the public, well, it's not on high on their interest list, and yet the news media keeps reporting it like it's an imminent danger. And all over the world, if you're adept enough to sign up on Google to have every flu report sent to your desk on your computer, you'll see that they're occurring rapidly and readily every day in every country. And, of course, this goes on and on. It seems to be like a concerted effort. And, of course, we bring up, of course, that something's wrong here. And, of course, I have a report being posted on my website. And we're trying to bring to the public's attention the things that they're not hearing, of course, about this this whole flu story. And, of course, the topic of our report, what they're not telling you about the predicted flu epidemic. And as I dug into this story, I became aware of something suddenly just didn't make any sense. And it's the story from last week where the National Center for Health Statistics was saying there was a drop in the mortality rate, and they published a chart. But on the chart, there was a rise in the death rate in the United States between 1992 and 93, and it was a severe, abrupt rise in the death rate. I don't know if any listeners tonight can recall some major mortality some major disease or problem that occurred in 1992-93. It just doesn't ring a bell, I don't think, in anybody's memory bank. It didn't in mine. When they're talking about the flu, they're talking about 500,000 Americans dying in 1918. They're talking about the Asian flu in 1957-58 and the Hong Kong flu in 1968-69, and then there was a little Russian flu outbreak in 1977-78. What was 1992 and 1993? It was a flu outbreak, but the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, doesn't even mention it. No one mentions it in any of their stories that it was one of the major flu epidemics of our time, and yet there it is on the charts. And I could only recognize it by the fact that it was an abrupt rise on the chart until I went to go look what caused it. Then I found out it was a flu pandemic at the time and only lasted 1 year. Well, it was just in our country. And, of course, the bigger story here is, why did they overlook it? Why do they never mention it? Well, about the same number of people got the flu, but more died. 93,000 more people died that year of all causes than the previous year, most of it being of the rise was the flu. And of course, as you look at the data, it becomes startling because they don't even mention this, and what happens is that most of this occurred in nursing homes. And of course, who are the most vulnerable but the elderly? They have a weakened immune system. And so we get into the effectiveness of vaccines, and we realize that we may be vaccinated, but there are people that don't get vaccinated. And most likely, they're the frail elderly that can't get out to the vaccination stations, and they may be in nursing homes. But even the data shows in nursing homes where they had a high vaccination rate and they had even pre-inoculated them with Tamiflu, there were deaths in those nursing homes and a massive pandemic. Do the vaccines work? We have to question this. And now, researchers, of course, at the National Institutes of Health are pointing out the vaccines haven't been working for years. It's right in a major medical journal. And what they're pointing out is most of the immunity and the low rates of death and infection from influenza over the past few years have been acquired by being exposed to similar viruses in other seasons in the past. Well, what are we taking the vaccines for? You see, what they're doing here and why this is all on such a world scale is every season they coach us into some sort of a frenzy because the government is the public relations agency. They buy the vaccines, pay the drug companies money, who pay them back in political payoffs. And then, of course, they've got to get it sold because this is something where the public puts in their $10 bill for and, of course, lines up at the flu vaccine station. So this is the very thing, is that every year they've got to sell it, where now you can kind of get the hint that what their goal is 100 million vaccine shots that are given out every year in the United States out of a population of 280 million. Well, if there was going to be a pandemic, what about the 180 million that don't get vaccinated?
Hold that thought right there, Bill. We'll be back in just a moment with the rest of our... Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Bill.
Well, all they're really trying to do here is sell vaccine shots. They're not really trying to lower the death rate. And what we're trying to point out is you can get the country vaccinated, and you may even have a lower rate of infection, but the same number of people will likely die, and that's because they're unlikely either to get the shots or the shots are probably not even going to work. And it'll be the frail elderly that are most at risk. They have the weakened immune system. And this is what the data is showing us from the 1992-93 increase in the mortality rate, the flu outbreak then, that is not even referred to in all the major stories about this, is that it was really a mortal demic. That is, the mortality rate went way up, but the number of people who got the flu is about the same. And I'm wondering why they never mentioned this one. And, of course, here's our experts from the National Institutes of Health telling us that the vaccines don't work. Now, there was a vaccine that was actually given out in 1997-98. And those in that report, it was saying that the flu vaccine was so ineffective that year that it was probably very close to what would have occurred had no vaccine been available. Of course, no one was ever told about that one. These vaccines are ineffective. What they're giving credit to the vaccine for is acquired from natural immunity by being exposed to these viruses in past seasons and having, of course, an acquired immunity over time. And, of course, this is what's going on. You and I hear every day that the most dangerous flu bug is something called the H5N1, the bird flu. And that's exactly what H5N1 is, a bird flu.
In other words, it's something birds get but human beings don't get ordinarily.
Very few human beings have gotten it. And, of course, we just think of it as something new. It's actually been in circulation in the birds since 1959. They admitted this last week. Now, that's over four decades of the birds having it. We don't see the birds dying off in mass, nor do we see humans. Also, the humans have had this at least, from what we can tell, maybe earlier, but since 1997. Now, we've got about 9 years there. And in that time, we have the, I believe, 100 and some people have died. But they're all poultry workers. They're people that have, in third world countries, that come in very close contact to the birds. They have poor nutrition, poor immunity. We're doing nothing for them, by the way, except treating them after they get sick. But even the ones that have gotten sick, we've only got a couple of hundred confirmed cases of this. So after 9 years, this is what we get. It does not transfer from human to human, but it could get transferred one time from the bird to the human. We don't have any human-to-human transfer. Now, there have been a couple of suspected cases. The World Health Organization experts have said this is patient one, like the one who got it after from another human, but it's fizzled, just like SARS fizzled. And, of course, the public kind of doesn't hear this. It's not in, you know, you really have to go digging for these numbers and these stories. And which strain of the virus has killed, of influenza virus, has killed the most people, let's say, in the last 20, 30 years? It's not H5N1. It's something called H3N2, which has killed over 500,000 Americans. I don't know how many worldwide. It's the prevalent flu strain. And by the way, most of the time every year, they have the vaccine includes three types of protection from three strains of the virus, and that's usually in there. And people still get it, by the way, meaning there are sub-variants of those viruses, and of course, that's what we're talking about. What is the Spanish flu? That's really H1N1, which has occurred a number of times over the past couple of decades. It's not the exact same strain, but it is the same type of virus, an influenza A of the H class, H1N1, and then it'll have a subvariant. Well, the subvariant tells us a lot because influenza viruses mutate so fast, you really can't create a vaccine that works. If you're making it 6 months ahead of time or whatever you're doing, these viruses are mutating so fast, and that's exactly what happened in this massive increase of death in 1992-93. The flu season started off normal. There weren't a lot of deaths. Young people were getting it. It was a different strain of the flu. And then it moved to this other form, H3N2, and then it took off, but only because it got to a vulnerable population. For the rest of us, we're not at risk. I've said this, and it's in our report going to be at knowledgeofhealth.com, and what we've said is that if they're going to have the quarantines that they're threatening us with, what they really need to do is encircle the nursing homes with police and make sure nobody gets in. Because if we've got the flu, certainly don't let the people in the nursing homes get it. So, you know, what's going to happen, and we're going to give you further evidence here in a moment, it's your immune system and whether it's working that counts. Because as we get older, it doesn't work very well. As we're very young, first year or two of life, we're vulnerable because we're actually, through breast milk, getting mother's immune factors, and that tells us something about women ought to be breastfeeding more, because formula will not have the immune factors. But so the baby leans on mommy's, of course, immune factors. But what we're getting here is the story that you really need to have a compromised immune system for this thing to get at you. This is why it comes, of course, from Asia every year, because it starts there where of course, nutrition is poor, immunity is down, those kind of things. So this is the kind of thing we get. What they're going to try and do now is order up about 1 billion flu shots a year, get all the public softened up for the very idea of lining up for flu shots, and then, of course, now that we're all game for it, frighten us as they do every year the last few years to try to get us to line up and pay a few bucks and make the pharmaceutical companies widen their market. Understand, the marketing is being done by their shills, certainly the health authorities, and in this case, what we have are, you know, the United States runs the whole show because the Centers for Disease Control, even if you go to their website, they're doing studies and other things in other countries and all these other things. So this is kind of what you get. They're kind of what sets the pace is our country. And so this is the kind of thing that we've gotten ourselves into. And, of course, it's a frightening thing. And as I wrote on the website, on my blog this morning, I was talking about, of course, the radio broadcast of 1938, The War of the Worlds, Orson Welles, and how he had his radio theater of the air, and then went on and told that he was going to have a little departure from his normal broadcast, and then went into his radio theater of the air. They were having a play on the air, the various actors acting the parts. And then, of course, all of a sudden there was an interruption. And a newscaster came on and said, "We interrupt this broadcast." And then they took people out into the field where a field reporter then declared that the Martians had landed in a field in New Jersey, that some of these creatures were getting out of the spacecraft and the flying saucer and so on. And this kept on. They went back to the theater, then they kept back to the news report. And sooner or later, people got the idea this was real. This was real. And, of course, this is just the way it went on, and it kept building and building, and, of course, as they explained it, people eventually thought it was so real, they packed the roads in their cars, they hid in cellars, loaded guns, wrapped their heads in wet towels as protection from Martian poison gas, attempting to defend themselves against the aliens that were coming. I mean, this was the kind of thing that went on. And I think the politicians learned right there, the imagination carried this further than the reality.
Well, you know, I think, Bill, it's so important that people understand that later on it turned out that this was part of an experiment on the American people to find out how they would react. And this was carefully calculated. They knew exactly what they were doing. It wasn't just simply, you know, entertainment. They were experimenting at that time to see how gullible the people would really be. And I think we're seeing exactly the same thing today with this influenza, which is going to attack any time. It's not a matter of if, but it's a matter simply of when. And you say that often enough, and you come up with a 50% mortality figure, and you never mention, you know, that you've got a great deal more chance of getting hit by lightning than you have of getting the bird flu, and you repeat it over and over again, 100 people are dead, but they're all overseas. There's not one case in America. It's amazing. It's like, you know, the War of the Worlds all over again. And the average individual has no idea that that program back in 1938 was calculated, it was planned, it was an experiment. How gullible are the American people? And I think they learned.
Well, then we come to our modern era, and it's University of California have people called demographers. They go back and look at demography, that is, things that have to do, of course, around the globe, and like diseases, and of course we're going to tell you in a moment now, after the break, just exactly what they had to say about the flu outbreak of 1918.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our good friend Bill Sardi. We're talking about the avian influenza. And believe me, there are a lot of good people who've been swept up in this whole hysteria. People I like and people I admire, but they're playing games with our minds, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, you should be prepared. I think that there are going to be some terrible catastrophes in America. But I will tell you that if we do have an influenza outbreak of this magnitude, it will not be because of a mutation that occurred simply out in the field. I believe it'll be a mutation that occurred in a laboratory someplace. All right, Bill, go ahead.
Well, certainly, as we look at the story, the University of California demographers were looking at who died in 1918. Now, this was an interesting era because it was an era before antibiotics. Our troops, our young men, had gone off to war and come back. And, of course, World War I was over, but they brought back with them tuberculosis. And it was a lung infection. Now, it's a bacterium. It's not a virus. You cough and you have it in your lungs. And they were wondering why so many people that had tuberculosis died after 1918. They almost, the TB rate dropped considerably, almost to zero. And what happened is that they matched it up with the fact that the flu virus of 1918 was odd. It didn't kill the very young and the very old as other flu outbreaks. It killed 25 to 34-year-olds. And, of course, these were the young men who went off to war, came back, infected their families. They had tuberculosis in their lungs. They were coughing already. And then came the influenza virus. You see how important it is to have a good immune system here? Here's another vulnerable group. And then, of course, they succumbed. Their lungs literally filled with fluid in hours, and they expired. And, of course, what this is telling us is the demographers at the University of California, Berkeley, say, in their own words, this kind of flu epidemic may never be seen again in future pandemics. And it's because of the large group that had tuberculosis. Now, today we have antibiotics. TB only comes in primarily from immigrants that come here. But to go back the other way, on the planet there are 2 billion people who have tuberculosis of the lung. And, of course, 2 billion out of 6 billion people on the planet. Who's the most vulnerable? I think they are. And if they ever do get a flu bug encircling the globe that is very virulent, then you've got 2 billion people, and we begin to wonder about, well, the World Health Organization is responsible for both health and life and keeping people alive and healthy, and at the same time, they have another dark side in that they are attempting to limit the population growth in the world. And, of course, we know that they've been up to nefarious activities in the past, and, of course, now we begin to wonder. They have created a flu virus that's 29,000, 39,000 times stronger than any virulent flu virus whatsoever that came from nature. This was created by mutating the virus many times, created at the University of Wisconsin. It's in a laboratory there, by the way, not the highest security lab, surprisingly. They actually take vials of it and ship it around the world to laboratories who want to test it. So it's in little boxes that UPS is shipping. There's no markings on it. I don't know what happens. But anyway, that is getting shipped around. If this should ever escape, and they should ever have a worker come home in Wisconsin and spread it to someone else, well, God help humanity, because especially if your immune system is down. Now, so many people don't realize the list gets bigger because these are people on immune-suppressing drugs. They're diabetics. They're people with autoimmune diseases like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. We have to watch carefully, certainly, about the pregnant females at any time. We have the very young children.
Hold that thought there. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Bill.
Well, certainly this the story of the flu is really got a lot of holes in it. Why does the news media keep parroting every press release that comes out? And that's what we have to ask. And it's all over the world. They're controlling the news media. And, of course, what we're trying to tell you is that, of course, it's hard for us to believe the news media is in on this thing. But either they've got some awfully dumb reporters, or they're just working on command here of some kind. This makes no sense whatsoever. In this past week or so, we saw a story in the news media about raloxifene. It's a drug being given to women in postmenopause, and of course they were told this past week that they could take it for breast cancer because it works equally well as tamoxifen, the anti-breast cancer drug, but far fewer side effects. How few? How? Well, if you need another 440 women to take raloxifene, and then one more woman will have one less side effect, you see. But this was supposedly a giant breakthrough. The drug's made by Eli Lilly. The Bush family senior is on the board of directors of Eli Lilly. Was this a favor to them? Well, we don't know, but when the government sent out its press release, virtually every reporter in the United States sent out a mere copy of it. Just changed the words around, and there it was. Women, you need no longer fear tamoxifen. You can take raloxifene. Now, if you have one extra woman out of 440 that escapes the side effect, that, let me see, one out of 100 is 1%. One out of 440, why, that's about one-fifth of 1%. Would you call that statistically significant, Dr. Stan? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No. So this is the kind of headlines we're being told. It's just hard for us to understand that the New York Times and every other news service is in on this, well, misdirection to women who have breast cancer. And, of course, it goes on and on, whether it's the flu or whatever it is. We see that so many things in medicine today, there's some sort of relationship where the politicians and government is in league, with the manufacturers of these vaccines or medicines, and then, of course, the news media carries the story without question. And, of course, this is just the way it goes. And so if you look at the story on the flu, and you're going to read the outbreaks were in 1918, 1957, and 1968, and they try and tell you because there's a flu cycle. What cycle? Let's see, the gap between 1918 and 58, that would have been about 40 years. Then from 58 to 68, that's 10 years. Then there was another one, 1978. Well, they call that an outbreak, but only 8,300 people die. It was mostly young people. I don't know how they call that an outbreak. The other ones were quite much bigger numbers. Because they say every year 36,000 people die, and then he declared the one in 1977 an epidemic when only 8,000 people died. I mean, this is such craziness, nothing making any sense, because they're trying to show that there's a cycle to it every 10 years, so they come up with the one that was a low year and still call it an epidemic. But the year where 92 or almost 93,000 more people died, they overlook it, because it's in the wrong year for the cycle to have occurred. See, you see, they're not telling us. Where are the health reporters here? These guys are certainly well-trained. They could look this kind of thing up, so they're just looking the other way. This makes no sense to me at all. And, of course, we know that the public hears 36,000 Americans die. One, that would be the very vulnerable elderly and so on. Number two is they take the deaths from pneumonia and match it up and combine it with influenza. So a lot of older folks do die of pneumonia, so we don't, because they match those two numbers together, we can't really tell how much of it was really the flu. Now, we do think a few people do die every year, but it's certainly not 36,000. it might be far less than 15,000. And, of course, the hype is to scare us every year into thinking there's death. If you're a 25- or 30-year-old adult, you're not going to die of the flu. You may get the flu. It's what your immune system's doing. Now, for the older folks, they do need to take vitamin E, boost their immune system, and even help the vaccines work better. And, of course, we have a lot of other natural medicines that work, too.
All right, John, how about vitamin D? Doesn't that have a specific effect?
Well, absolutely. Vitamin D, we find that the flu comes in winter when vitamin D levels are down, and, of course, this keeps us from getting, it normalizes the immune system so our lungs won't fill with fluid and we die. We might get the flu, but we won't die of the flu.
And, of course, this is one of the things that is being poo-pooed by the medical establishment, by the Wall Street Journal. I wonder why the Wall Street Journal keeps running these ads saying there's just no benefit from vitamins. You can, we're sure you can trust us. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. Bill, go ahead, pick the story up.
Well, certainly as we look at this flu story, and we're trying to give you these by example so you can catch wind of a bigger story even, and that is that the government issues health bulletins. Maybe we need to be more skeptical of those. Here's even MSNBC saying skeptics warn that the bird flu fears are overblown and going on into quoting some people and saying this. But, of course, it's overshadowed because we don't know when they're crying wolf. And so all of us, even though we know what they're doing, we're not quite so sure, and we're a little concerned in the back of our mind. Well, what were we supposed to do? They're not going to have enough vaccine. The vaccines don't work. If the vaccines were available, do you think you could get there in the panic that will ensue? Don't you think they're going to close off the roads and all these kind of things anyway? They're going to have the quarantines. And can you see Americans getting turned against American because going down to the store or going to school, you know, they're all, you didn't get your shot. So now all of a sudden we're going to be ostracized if we don't get the shots ourselves, and of course then expose ourselves. If they're building these new vaccines, they're untried, and of course what if they made a mistake in those vaccines? They're untried. Maybe there's a contaminant in there as there was in the polio vaccine. And then we've really got a bigger problem. And of course this goes on and on. Will they vaccinate the entire military? What will they do? And, of course, they seem to be plotting and planning for something on a world scale, and this seems to be some sort of an exercise for drill to try and get more than 1 billion flu vaccine shots sold every year instead of 100 million that they just sell in the United States every year. So everybody attuned to this. The risk is coming. They beat the drum. They blow the horn. And then all of us in fear line up and pay a few dollars to have the shots. And of course, now it might be a shot against the bird flu of which humans don't get. It has to be some sort of a major mutated form, and we're many mutations away from that ever occurring. And of course, what does it all mean? Why would I get a shot for the H5N1 when it's a bird flu? Well, you see, maybe they figure if they just inoculate us against something innocent, we'll all just get a worthless shot and they'll all make the money. I mean, I don't know what their thinking is, but I have to do a little exploring with the audience here to help them see their way through this because they can't
hold
see
that
it.
Thought right there, Bill. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Bill Sardi. And Bill, I wanted to go ahead and get your website out there so people will know how to get your website and pull down your information.
Well, of course, we're breaking this story, and of course, you'll get more information here than you will find in any other news source. What they're not telling you about the predicted flu epidemic, it's at knowledgeofhealth.com. Lots of free reports there and things. And there are a few of my books for sale there. I make no profit on them, but if you're a book reader and you want to have good health, I find the profits all go to managing the website and the people that keep it up on the Internet. But It's all there for you. There's information about autism and blood pressure and arthritis and so on, and what to do in menopause. So you might want to check out a lot of that information. Some people like to get to me on the internet, ask questions, and of course we answer all questions, no charges. Try to do that as a public service. We're trying to give you good information tonight. We thank Radio Liberty for giving us the airtime to share with you and, of course, give you this information. We work hard to dig up good facts and try to give you the information the way it should be given to you. And these health subjects get rather confusing, especially when we read things that are in the contrary in the newspapers, hear it on television and so on, and then we wonder about certain things. So, it really takes a lot of study and digging into these things and sorting them out and making sure that we're right when we do it. We list all the references that we researched in all of our articles. We don't pretend to be experts. We pretend to be good reporters. And, of course, this is what we're trying to give to you is good information. Many of you may be concerned about the drug Tamiflu. There's a connection there, of course, with Donald Rumsfeld. Secretary of Defense did captain a pharmaceutical company at one time, Gilead Pharmaceuticals, and of course they make he still has stock in that company, and they make the Tamiflu. And of course Tamiflu is only helpful at the beginning of when you get the symptoms of the flu, and then it's never been proven to lower mortality rates, and of course it does have some side effects. And it's killed a few children in Japan, where they use it more widely there. And it's something that I doubt will be much of an effect in helping. It does shorten the symptoms by a day or a day and a half. That isn't the issue. What we need to do is show that we can calm and normalize the immune system so it doesn't overreact, fill our lungs with fluid, and cause us to die of a pneumonia-like flu reaction. That's what we need to do, is calm that down. Now, we do know that they're not only vitamin D, but we have selenium. It's a trace mineral. It's in the soil. Some of us live in areas where the soil levels are low, so the foods we eat are likely to be low in selenium. And selenium, it keeps the gene mutation from occurring, so that if you get the flu, it doesn't mutate into the form that can be virulent and mortal. So, again, all of this being very well documented in the media, in the medical journals, but not shared with the public. I had a microbiologist get a hold of me on the internet and try to tell me I didn't know what I was talking about. Of course, by 6 or 7 emails later, he was thanking me for all the information he had never been aware of before. So, it's a little startling, and we try and use good science with good references and try and get it out to the public. And even our microbiologists and virologists aren't caught up with all this information as they should be. According to Reuters News, as of this month, 110 people have died of the H5N1 bird flu virus. Out of 196, they're infected. And, of course, all of them virtually poultry workers. So, this is after, by the way, a number of years, and as we say, the bird flu has been in the birds, in the flock, since 1959. So nobody was worried about it in 1965, 1975, 1995, didn't matter. So why now? Why are we so worried about this? There's a different strain of the flu, H3N2, which has killed over 500,000 Americans, and you never hear about that one. So it's all in our report. We try and give it to you. The lessons learned here, if you're in a high-risk group, if you're an older adult or you're very young, you have very young children at home, you need to take special precautions. You go to my website. You can read about this. Some of it's in our report. We tell you about things that may sound a little silly, like elderberry syrup, vitamin E, selenium, certainly vitamin C. All of these are very good for our immune system. They help us, of course, build our immunity, and we just need to know, well, how much, where do we get it, what is involved, is there good science behind it. Fresh crushed garlic is always good to have around. It works quite well. So, and it goes on like this. There are good things that you can use. In Israel, they're studying elderberry syrup. There's now, I think, 4 or 5 reports on its use with the flu, and it's a strikingly good results in helping adults and children when they get the flu. So, of course, all of these things are just things to learn, and we need to know how to use them, put them in our home medicine chest, understand there isn't a good antiviral drug, and the vaccines don't work so well, and, of course, that's why we're going to some of these natural remedies. The Centers for Disease Control, the FDA, don't want you to learn about them because then you won't go get the vaccines. They're vaccine sales organizations. So this is what you're facing. You're facing a organizations in government that may not be working in your best interest, but working in the interest of selling vaccines. They may be ineffective. They may be inaccessible for a lot of people. But they want to tell you that's the only defense we have. It's really odd that we never have a backup plan, even though we don't have enough vaccine for everyone in the country. Isn't that odd? Somebody's remiss here, and if there really is a flu that could kill us all, well, then they're just leaving most of the population at risk here because they never make more than 100 million doses of the vaccine when we have, I think, about 287 million Americans now. So this is our problem. We're trying to spell it all out for you in ways that you can see with good references so you can understand the real story about the flu and why the story, the news media won't let go of it, why it stays in the news. We're being softened up. If this isn't propaganda, I don't know. You'll never understand it if you can't see it here. And, of course, you just need to be able to sort this out for yourself. That's why we try and give it to you so you can look at it in print with your own eyes and examine what we're saying here verbally. Because we have a lot of license here without any feedback from the listening audience to just talk and give you information. So the first time you hear it, you're not exactly sure you buy it all. Well, we give you a chance to read it, check the resources, ask me questions, go to the internet, knowledgeofhealth.com. Let's see, let's pinch ourselves and see if any of this is really true. By the way, last week we had another groundbreaking report on our website. Because as we started this story tonight, we were talking about the decline in the death rate. Last week, they reported, National Center for Health Statistics, that there was a drop in the death rate, a significant one last year, and it got about 50,000 less deaths, and most of it from cardiovascular death. And we began to scratch our head and wondered, and we were the first ones to report. And we wondered if this wasn't because they took Vioxx off the marketplace. Remember Vioxx, the anti-inflammatory drug that was causing the blood clots, and therefore that was a cardiovascular, you'd get a heart attack? And it was Dr. David Graham at the Food and Drug Administration who reported that Vioxx would cause about that many deaths, between 30 and 70,000 or so Americans might die. And sure enough, here's the dramatic drop in the death rate. And, of course, it when Vioxx came on the market, there was a slight rise in the death rate. Now, it was only slight, but there weren't as many people taking Vioxx as there were 4 or 5 years later when the recall came about. And then this death rate, of course, dropped. There were about 19 million prescriptions for Vioxx, and then it dropped to about 13 million. So it was a drop of about 6 million prescriptions. And this is where we saw the 50,000 less deaths in the American population than the previous year. The death rate dropped. Well, we think it's because they took Vioxx off the marketplace. Again, you won't hear these stories elsewhere, and that's why we encourage you to use our website as a good source of health information at knowledgeofhealth.com.
Well, I think that people have to really realize that they knew that Vioxx was going to kill people, and they did absolutely nothing about it. We have a newsletter up on my website going into Dr. Graham's testimony. We reproduced his entire testimony, gave you what the government knew ahead of time, and they allowed this to be put on the market, knowing that it would increase, you know, the incidence of heart disease, heart attack, and stroke 6 or 7-fold. Now, they will tell you, of course, you know, this is a wonderful drug. You know, it's going to decrease your chance of dying of high blood pressure 3%. I mean, here's a drug that increases the incidence of heart attack and stroke six or seven times. We're talking about Vioxx, and they allow that on the market. And, you know, this is the great tragedy. In fact, it would still be on the market if it hadn't been for Dr. David Graham risking his career and going before the Senate to let the American people know the truth. And then, of course, the FDA, went along with taking it off the market. But they were totally unconcerned about the amount of harm that they did. And Bill did allude, of course, to the fact that, one of the vaccines, the polio vaccine had a cancer-producing virus, SV4. We carry a book called The Virus and the Vaccine that goes into the fact that there's so many cancers today, and if they're tested, they will carry this cancer-producing virus. Well, this was actually in the original polio vaccine, and they lied to the American people, and rather than let them know what was happening, they allowed two of the vaccine producers to actually continue to use up all their stocks until it was gone. Now, I will say that at that time, back in 1960, Merck did pull their polio vaccine, oral polio vaccine, off the market, but the FDA let the other companies continue disseminating that cancer, that vaccine that they knew had a cancer-producing virus in it, and to this very day, they're lying to the American people about it, because after all, if the American people realize that, they wouldn't trust the government.
Well, certainly we see this all the way along. If the public loses the confidence in the vaccine system, and shame on the American Academy of Pediatrics for letting this autism problem get out of hand. We know it's related to the vaccinations. Even the parents can see it within hours of the vaccine being administered. And, of course, the doctors are all saying, no, the studies show otherwise. With no other probable cause, and of course, what is it, one out of every 130 children in California or something now have autism. I mean, it's terrible, and yet they're not even searching for a cause. They're just saying they're going to improve the care after the children come down with autism. So they know what it is. It's the vaccine. Why would they not search frantically for what the other cause might be? So they say that there's no evidence that the vaccines and the mercury and so on cause the autism, and then they make no pursuit of any other possible cause whatsoever. There's no funding for any other research in any other direction. So we know what this is. They're just covering. Of course, you can't even get pediatricians today to take care of your children unless you have all these shots. Now, I have a 22-month-old little boy here at home, and in 22 months, he was supposed to have gotten 26 different injections, 26 different shots in his regimen by now. This is just too much. And by the way, this is a child under 2, and they would have been in shooting him up even before he was 6 months old. Now, a lot of the inserts on the packages for these vaccines, they don't even give it to the child before 6 months. The pediatrician isn't even following these guidelines. But, you know, this is just great marketing. Just mandate it. Make the pediatricians lean on all the families to have it. And it's by law. You can't get your kids in school. You can't get them in college. You can't get them in nursing facilities. You can't get your kids in hospitals. You can't get your kids into nursery schools. It doesn't matter what it is, they're all requiring a shot record. And of course, so many of us are capitulating. We have no gumption to stand up to the doctors whatsoever. It doesn't matter whether the doctor's giving us a liver toxic drug like Crestor or one of the other statin drugs for cholesterol. I've had so many people just tell me, well, I don't want to lose my doctor. Well, I just can't stand up to him. Well, he's told me he's going to leave me as the doctor if I don't do... You see, these kinds of... Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to take a step back. We just have to stop being little pawns on the chessboard. We're paying a terrible price here. And, of course, it doesn't matter what it is. Now, on my website, I do have a free ebook, The Collapse of Conventional Medicine, trying to tell you all these things. Whether it was estrogen replacement therapy for women, which was being prescribed for years and then turned out that wasn't so healthy for the women. Whether it was arthroscopic knee surgery, they'd go in, take a look, pull the scope out, and bill Medicare or whoever for it, and you know, it was overdone. Certainly mastectomies for women. They did these total breast removal surgeries, and then they found out that they weren't any more effective than the, of course, the lumpectomies and so on. And then, of course, they even did the bone marrow transplants for the women with breast cancer. Of course, they were totally ineffective, but they'd get the women to lobby and appear on the front page of newspapers, and I'm dying, and I need this treatment, so the insurance companies would fold and pay for it. And this went on and on, knowing full well that it was totally ineffective. And this goes on and on. Medicine, conventional medicine, is collapsing around us. It's only us, being gullible, who keep lining up for all these medications, which, by the way, are unsafe. It was Ralph Nader's organization, Public Citizen, that's pointed out that most of the medicines on the market today are unsafe and have never undergone a safety study. They actually put these products on the market. They are proven to be effective, but not totally safe. And the safety study comes after you're using them. And then if you die, well, that will show up as the statistic. So this is kind of what we're facing today. And if you're on the 7 medications your doctor prescribed, you're over-medicated. That's simple.
Now, we're going to be back in just a moment here with Bill Soddy and a wrap-up this evening's program. Bill, once again, the website where people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, Knowledge of Health, knowledgeofhealth.com. Go to Radio Liberty first, of course. We recommend you always visit Radio Liberty.
Okay, hang on. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Bill, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Certainly, I think it is puzzling and perplexing. We're trying to give you bigger examples than the smaller stories. And, of course, the smaller story, even though it seems to be big, is about the flu. The smaller story is, you know, what do we do about it? But the bigger story is, why are they keeping hyping this? Why do they continue to spread fear? Why is the news media in on this? What are the public agencies and government? What are they about? And of course, is there a population control agenda here? I mean, these are questions we ask. We don't want to be totally just a conspiracy in every closet, but we have the right to ask questions, and I think the public needs to hear those questions and answer them for themselves. We need to try and give you as much good information so we're not just jumping to conclusions and putting ideas in your head. You need to come and examine some of these things for yourself. But, of course, for all of us, we're busy in our lives. We don't have the time to research all these things. So what we're trying to do is play a role of investigating, digging deep into some of these subjects and helping them sort them out. But please, don't just confine yourself to these smaller issues and see the bigger issue is, can we trust these government health agencies to give us good information? Are there other agendas in play, like population control and so on? And what are we going to do if any of these things occur? If we can't trust the medicines, where do we go? Alternative medicine is a grab bag. It's a bunch of new age medicine. A lot of it is unproven. And so rather than go there, we try and give you alternatives that are proven in good science right in the medical literature and try and give you some alternatives here so that you can find things that are less expensive and you can, of course, get healthy at home.
And, of course, things like vitamin C and vitamin D and
right.
Selenium and certainly many of the other things, quercetin. Certainly the garlic has a very definite, certainly antibiotic effect as do certain all of these things are so important for health.
Well, they certainly are. We just need to learn the lessons. But will we play with fire in one hand and the natural medicines in the other, or are we going to learn enough about this and feel confident of it you see, because we are playing with fire, and we're so many people taking these troublesome medications, and then the natural medicines to counter the side effects of them. So I'm hoping that more and more people, I keep hearing from people in your audience that they've given up all their medications, they feel better than they ever have, and of course, a lot of them on blood pressure.
Hold that right there, please. Well, Bill, I certainly appreciate you so much for being with us this evening. Do you have a parting thought before I let you go?
Well, don't worry about the bird flu. It's for the birds, and the bird flocks aren't even dying. So I think it's a yawner of a story. I do think you should keep your eye on it just to see what government's up to. I think they're up to a bigger and a more nefarious objective. But nonetheless, I really wouldn't worry about the bird flu. If you're worried about the flu and the colds that come in the winter months, well, then certainly learn about some of these natural remedies.
God bless. Thanks so much, Bill.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Bill Sardi. Hope you enjoyed our program with Bill. And this is the time, of course. Let me just mention that we actually have a couple of wonderful books that will give you the background of things that you need to know about your health. One of them is Russell Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We carry a new book. It's called Children's Health. We have a book on magnesium. We have a book on the statin drugs. We have a wonderful 4-tape set on life-saving health secrets. If you want to know the truth about autism, we have a 4-tape set on autism. If you want to know the truth about mercury, of course, we have 2 4-tape sets on mercury. The government recently came out with a report and said we can assure you that if you have your children's teeth filled with mercury fillings, they call them silver fillings, there's absolutely nothing to worry about. We have 2 studies, each with 500 children, one in Portugal, one in New England, and there is no harm at all. And then if you read the full story, and believe me, I read the New York Times, and they sort of take out the important point that the children initially had elevated blood levels of mercury, and then eventually they went to normal. Well, of course they're going to go to normal, but you don't determine the problem with the blood levels. It's the children who can't excrete the mercury that put it into their brains. Well, they said, over 3 or 4, I guess it was 5 or 6 years, well, they didn't notice any metal deficiency, but they didn't check into the children for autism because it was too small a number to really to be concerned about autism. But we can assure you, trust us. I mean, it's perfectly safe for us to put mercury in your teeth to elevate the blood level initially. Of course, if you're a pregnant woman, don't you dare even think about eating fish with mercury in it, but roll up your sleeve if you're pregnant, and we're going to go ahead and give you a mercury-laden influenza shot because we've left it in the influenza vaccines. Why would you do something like that? If you doubt many of the things we're saying, we'll be glad to send you a page from Dr. Fudenberg's website. Dr. Fudenberg's in his 80s, the dean of vaccinologists, pointing out that if you are foolish enough to take an influenza shot, say 3 or 4 of them over a 5-year period, you're between 60 and 65, 10 years later, your incidence of Alzheimer's disease is up 1,000%. They know that. They just don't want you to know. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our website is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. The books we recommend, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Children's Health, and we have so much more. I think our new book on statins, our 4-tape set on statins, our 4-tape set on mercury, our 4-tape set on aspartame and MSG, our 4-tape set on fluorides, all of these things you need to get. You need to understand there is a population control agenda. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Pray for revival. Pray for our country. And till we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and hopefully they're going to be the views of our guests, but our regularly scheduled guest is not yet available. Hopefully he will be. But right now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I'm going to ask my producer to come over here, and I'm going to go ahead and give him my little book so he can make sure that we have the right telephone number. If our producer would come over, we'll give him our number, make sure that he's calling the correct number. Otherwise, we're going to be talking about, really whatever you would like to talk about. If you'd like to talk about what Bill was just talking about, I think this is a fascinating subject. I mean, why would they be trying to frighten us to death about the danger of the bird flu? Now, let me tell you that I fought the battle against the AIDS epidemic for 10 years within organized medicine. As a result of the fact that the Public Health Service and other people did not do the right thing as far as the epidemic is concerned, 500,000 Americans are dead. We lose 30 to 40,000 here every year, more than that become infected. We have 1 million people who are infected in America. We've lost 500,000 people. 30 million people are dead throughout the world. And yet nobody really seems to care. In Botswana, the latest figures on the epidemic are that 46% of pregnant women, and they in Botswana, they have a very prosperous nation, and so they have medical facilities. They do things there that we can't afford to do here in America, because, after all, we want to help the rest of the world. So we can't have, you know, a free HIV testing for every woman, but they do that in Botswana. 46% of the women in Botswana who are tested, pregnant women, 46% are HIV infected, and they're all going to die. Now, that is either the greatest public health tragedy of all time or a very successful genocidal policy. And I would like to suggest that is exactly what that is. This is a genocidal policy that is being actually coordinated through the World Health Organization and the American organizations that are dedicated to population control. But we can't let the people of the world know that anything could be that wicked. Now, if it was not a genocidal policy, if it was a failed public health policy, wouldn't you anticipate that they would actually change the public health policy? I mean, wouldn't that be the logical thing to do? If you had a public health policy and 46% of the people were infected with a disease that was going to kill them, wouldn't you change? Well, they're not going to change the policy. They're going to continue doing just what they've done in the past and let the disease continue to spread. Now, you must understand that this disease has a predilection for the black. And that's why the majority of the people who are coming down with the disease here in America, even though only 10% of our population is black, the majority of the new cases of HIV and AIDS today are in blacks. Because this is a genetically designed disease that will affect blacks more than whites. How can I say it's genetically designed? Well, because one of the people who worked on it came forward and told a gentleman, I believe it's Gary Glum or Gary Nunn, who wrote the book Full Disclosure, that he had worked on this, and they had actually created this new disease that was designed to kill blacks. Could something that horrible be really true? Well, we're going to talk about that, or whatever you'd like to talk to. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're simply talking about population control. You know, one of the reasons I went into into talk radio was after 10 years of working within organized medicine, trying to stop the spread of this terrible, terrible disease called HIV, or call it AIDS, call it whatsoever you will, it's all the same disease. And after spending literally thousands of dollars of my own, sending out mailings to the doctors across the state of California and lecturing all over this country and in Australia, New Zealand, and in Canada, certainly contacting the doctors personally here in the state of California, I won the California Medical Association, the House of Delegates, around to my point of view. And they supported an effective public health policy, but it really didn't matter what the doctors wanted. There are people within organized medicine who are intent upon mass killing, and they blocked an effective public health policy. They are blocking an effective public health policy today, and people continue dying in the United States and contracting this terrible disease, but it's primarily a disease of the black. And if you understand the Malthusian attitude of the WASP elite who run this country, you'll understand they have total contempt for the black, both in this country and in Africa. There really are people who are totally evil, and they have conspired to create new diseases. Now, that may sound very, very difficult for you to believe, but we have a lot of documentation on that, and I would suggest a four-tape set we have. It was recorded in the early 1990s by Randy Engel, although one of the four tape sets there is an interview I did. And it's an interview with Dr. Dunnigan, who is a pediatrician working in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who in 1969 had heard a talk that was given by Dr. Richard Day, who at that time was the medical director for Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day was addressing a group of pediatricians. Dr. Day had been a neonatologist. He'd been one of Dr. Dunnigan's professors when he was in medical school. And so they had the idea that, you know, that he was going to be talking about things having to do with medicine. But instead of that, Dr. Day said, well, put away your recorders and don't take any notes, and I'm going to tell you what the future holds. And then he proceeded to tell them the most incredible story. We have it available either in transcript or on tape, as Dr. Dunnigan tells how Richard Day said, you know, there are too many people in the world. We're going to have to create new diseases to kill off large numbers of people, suppress the treatments for cancer, and we'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to have open lines this evening, so if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, that's 464-8295, but anyway, of course, we were simply talking about this idea that there really are people out there who are planning to kill off a large part of the world's population. And that idea is so foreign to most people that, you know, unless you've read the writings of Jacques Cousteau, who talks about the necessity of killing 350,000 people a day, or Bertrand Russell, who talks about how we really need to have a black plague sweep through the earth every generation, that'll keep the population down. Incidentally, that quotation comes from Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society, at page 103, as I remember, 103, 104. And if you'd like to get copies of that, that's included in our syllabus on fluoride. We actually got permission to actually reproduce those pages, so you would understand there really are people out there who look at the world that way. If you haven't read my Population Control Agenda monograph, why, it's up on my webpage at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. We quoted Dr. Sam Keen, who I think was about somewhere in the early 1990s, attending the State of the World Forum that was held in the Bay Area that year. And, of course, Dr. Sam Keen talked about the necessity of eliminating 90% of the world population, and he got a standing ovation from the crowd. In fact, just within the last few weeks, there was a talk that was given in Texas by a professor there, and he actually gave a similar estimate. We've got to eliminate 90% of the population. There was a gentleman who was in the audience and heard it, he was shocked, and especially shocked when, why, the professor who suggested we need to eliminate 90% of the world's population got a standing ovation. So there really are people out there who have a different worldview, and of course there are people who favor abortion. They've killed 40 to 50 million unborn children in America, and certainly we see these things going on all the time. We see wars going on. We see the destruction of, it looks like we've got Frosty Woodridge on the right. Okay. Frosty, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm so glad we got hold of you. Anyway, Frosty had a wonderful article up on the Internet, and he was talking about a speech he'd gone to hear. I guess it was a meeting of some sort, where Governor Lamb had, formerly Governor of Colorado, had gotten up, and it was talking about immigration, and he talked about how to destroy a nation. And do you want to just get into that, Frosty? I thought that was such a fascinating article that you wrote.
Well, thank you, Stan. And ladies and gentlemen, I had the privilege and certainly the honor to be at a population immigration conference in the fall with Governor Lamb of Colorado and Tom Tancredo and some of the big hitters across the nation who are absolutely terrified at the concern for the massive immigration load that the United States is taking on now to the detriment of this nation as we continue to go into what Meg Sifornia's author, who really preceded Governor Lamb to the podium, Victor Davis Hanson, in his book, Meg Sifornia, said that we are moving toward cultural apartheid, that we're moving toward linguistic apartheid, and that we are moving toward ethnic apartheid and the similar consequences that are now facing much of Europe, certainly in England, certainly in Paris, France, certainly in Sydney, Australia. And one of the unbelievably incredible points that Governor Lamb made was that when the rate of immigration exceeds the rate of assimilation, it is a recipe for the destruction of any civilization. And of course, the mantra here in the United States is that we're a nation of immigrants. However, until and before 1964, we were a nation of immigrants that was pretty settled, with only about 150 to 200,000 immigrating into our country each year, and they were very easily assimilated because they wanted to become a part of the American dream and speak English and assimilate. But today we have about 4 million coming in. That's 3 million illegally and 1 million legally, and they're not assimilating. And Governor Lamb got up in front of the audience, and he literally spellbounded, if you will, the audience. I was about 10, 15 feet away because I was in front, and I was the only journalist to record the speech and then reported it. And it is the basis for a book that I wrote with his permission called Immigration's Unarmed Invasion, Deadly Consequences. And that book has been The 8 Ways to Destroy America, plus the 4 that I added. And the 4 that I added had to do with the diseases being brought into the country. Number 2, the water crises that it's creating because of the overload of exceeding the carrying capacity, certainly in the West here where I am in Denver. And then the third was the crime the rate that was just exploding because of the crimes, the criminals coming into the United States, MS-13 gang members, you name it. And then number 4, or the 12th reason, was by Dr. Albert Bartlett, and that the fact that we are exceeding the carrying capacity of the United States, and at the current rate of growth, we will double the U.S. population from the current 300 million to well over 600 million by 2065, and that every city and all the states will, of course, double their populations and create unbelievable stress. And for anyone who has read the Time magazine just a couple weeks ago, global warming is no longer a theory. It is wreaking havoc on the animal world, wreaking havoc on our climates, creating such things as Katrina, the big tornadoes coming off of the coast of Australia, the deserts that are intensifying, and of course heating up the polar caps. And of course, as you know, I've traveled to the Arctic. I was there this summer. I've been down to the South Pole. I've worked with top scientists, and we're really doing some great damage to the structural systems that really make our planet sustainable and that create all the sustainability for life. And so that's how this thing came about.
And if I may quote one of the great minds of the 20th century, I quote Albert Einstein. He said, "The problems in the world today are so enormous, they cannot be solved with the level of thinking that created them," unquote. And so Governor Lamb, whom I know personally and have great honor for, he is a Democrat, and of course Tom Tancredo is Republican, and I want you to know that both men stand shoulder to shoulder, and they are head and shoulders above the rest of Congress, certainly the most of the politicians and the governors of this country, because they understand what I understand. I have traveled throughout the world on 6 continents now, again on my bicycle last summer, almost 4,000 miles from 600 miles north of the Arctic Circle in Norway to Athens, Greece. I got to see what was happening to France and Amsterdam and all the overrun countries there in Europe with their population crises. And let me tell you, what Lamb talked about, and we can go through the 8 and then I can discuss the other 4 during this the time together.
Okay, you go right ahead. That's why I asked you to come on.
Okay, well, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States of America, for the first time since the Civil War, back in 1861 or whatever the Civil War came on to us, is now facing one of the greatest crises since that Civil War, because it's not an external threat. It's not the World War One. It's not Vietnam. It's not World War Two. It's certainly not from the outside. The enemy is within us. Essentially, we have swallowed the scorpion, if you will. We now have 20 million illegal aliens in this country. They're undermining law and order. They're undermining our language. They're undermining our culture. They're undermining every aspect of what this nation became through our Constitution. And if we continue on this path, we will probably end up much like Paris, France.
Let me just intervene there, because you used the term 20,000, and I would simply point out that I think that's a very accurate figure. I think they're lying to us when they said 11 or 12 million. In 1986, they were telling us there were only 1 million illegal aliens. Of course, there was only 1 million that they were going to make legal, and it ended up 3 million. They're simply lying. They know it's 20 million. We have this from reliable sources within the government. We have it from Bear Stearns, and I'm glad you're using that figure. Why would we think the government would tell us the truth?
Well, and of course, we all know that the government doesn't tell us the truth, but the September 12th issue 2004 of Time magazine showed who left the door open. They verified that 3 million illegal aliens are coming across our borders every year now, and that the numbers show from Bear Stearns that we have no less than 20 million illegal aliens from all the records, and the different kinds of tests show this. And of course, I've been down the border myself. And everything that I wrote in my book, Immigration's Unarmed Invasion, was corroborated by the two Pulitzer Prize-winning authors, Bartlett and Steele, who wrote that piece for Time magazine, Who Left the Door Open? So, yes, there's no question. The United States government is withholding, and George Bush and the Congress are facilitating this invasion by their very actions.
And I think it's really so interesting that only within this last couple of weeks have they started to enforce the federal laws that have been in place since 1986 that basically say that, you know, if you hire a illegal alien knowingly, then, of course, this is a federal crime. Now, had they imposed those laws, had they enforced those laws, we would not have had the problem. Large corporations would not have been hiring illegal aliens at low wages, and they would have gone home because there wouldn't have been any jobs for them. But you see, the people in government want the problem, and they've been financing these organizations for illegal aliens, LULAC and MALDAVE, and all of these organizations funded by the Ford Foundation, funded by our government to create the problem, to justify these new laws they want to put in, because they want to destroy our borders, our sovereignty. They want a multicultural society. They want they can play one group against the other. And out of the chaos that's coming, of course, will come order. With the loss of all freedom, there are people who really want a dictatorship in America. And what better way to have a dictatorship than to create a state of social unrest? And then, of course, we're going to have martial law, won't we? We'll be back in just a moment with Frosty Wildritz. Go ahead, Frosty.
All righty. First of all, for these 12 points on how to destroy America, Governor Lamb said, and I quote the first one, if you believe that America is too smug, too self-satisfied, too rich, then let's destroy America. It is not that hard to do. No nation in history has survived the ravages of time. In fact, the great historian Arnold Toynbee observed that all great nations rise and fall, and that, and I quote, an autopsy of history would show that all great nations commit suicide, unquote. And you can imagine, as you start to feel this thing and you start to connect the dots, and that's what I try to do for all Americans in my columns each week on newswithviews.com, here is how they destroyed their countries, Lamb said. First, turn America into a bilingual or multilingual and bicultural country. History shows that no nation can survive the tension, conflict, and antagonisms of two or more competing languages and cultures. It is a blessing for an individual to be bilingual. However, it is a curse for a society to be bilingual. The historical scholar Seymour Lipset put it this way, the histories of bilingual and bicultural societies that do not assimilate are histories of turmoil, tension, and tragedy. Canada, Belgium, Malaysia, Lebanon all face crises of national existence in which minorities press for autonomy, if not independence. Pakistan and Cyprus have divided. Nigeria suppressed an ethnic rebellion. France faces difficulties with its Muslims. And, of course, so do countries such as Britain at this point, and certainly Amsterdam, Holland, and, of course, Sydney, Australia now. So that's the first thing that is destroying America, is this massive overload of immigrants that are not paying attention to our laws, who are not assimilating, and they're creating city-states and languages that are separate, and it's literally causing apartheid, cultural apartheid, linguistic apartheid, and so our country will start breaking up as these numbers grow in these particular ethnic groups.
And let me just point out that back in 1988, Senator Hayakawa tried to pass legislation that said that English was the official language of this country. And he couldn't understand why he got so much opposition. It was so logical. I mean, Senator Hayakawa was Japanese, but he loved America. He was an American, and America was the country that he loved. Well, you have to understand that there are people who hate America. They want to destroy our sovereignty, our integrity, and merge us into this world government, and so they block that. And now, of course, so many of the forms you get, you know, they're both in English or in Spanish. And so many times the announcements we made on the telephone, one message in English, one message in Spanish. It's part of a plan. And it's being fostered by some of the wealthiest people in our nation, by our major corporations, and by those politicians whose loyalty is not to America, but to this internationalist dream. Once you understand what's going on, it all begins to make sense. Otherwise, it's all confusion. Wouldn't you agree?
You know, I would agree absolutely, Stan. And let me make four points that I think the listeners out there are going to appreciate. In order to sustain and maintain a Republican constitutional form of government. This is a constitutional republic that we enjoy. It's a brilliant piece of paper. However, it is a very delicate form of government, and this kind of governance takes four aspects. Number one.
Before you do that, hold off, because we want to get our rest of our stations back on board with us. So our guest is Frosty Wolowitz. Mm-hmm. We're talking about how to destroy a great nation. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Foster Wolowitz. He's talking about how to destroy a great nation. So pick up the story there, Frosty.
Okay, well, this being a constitutional republic, I think it was Ben Franklin said, we're going to give you a constitutional republic. Now let's see if you can keep it. Or it might have been John Adams.
Benjamin Franklin speaking to a Mrs. Powell on the steps from the Constitutional Convention.
Beautiful. So I was correct.
You were absolutely right.
So, as a matter of fact, I just came back from 8 hours in the Denver, Colorado State Capitol in a House committee trying to get English as the preferred language here in Colorado. But unfortunately, Francesca Navidad Coleman, who is a tremendous Mexican illegal alien sympathizer, and a Hispanic who is doing everything she can to suppress any laws here in Colorado that have to do with dealing with illegal aliens. She gave an outburst to me, and of course I countered her in the Denver Post. You can read about it tomorrow. But one of the things that most Americans don't appreciate and have taken for granted for so long, and these are the four aspects that make this republic possible. Number one, this kind of governance demands a highly educated population. Number two, a constitutional republic demands that everyone has the similar moral code and abides by that moral code, buys into it. Number three, that all citizens buy into a similar ethical system so that everybody stops at the stoplight. Everyone doesn't go out and rob, even if they could rob. They are ethical. And so we all buy into that. And number four, in order to maintain the constitutional republic, you need to have everyone speaking a similar tongue or language so that they can, first of all, discuss, they can debate, and then they can come to resolution in that same language. A nation needs a common language like it needs a common currency. And, of course, if anyone appreciates what's happening out there, press 1 for Spanish, 2 for English, 3 for Arabic. And as more and more immigrants come pouring into this country from third worlds, their little deal is not to become one with America and become part of America. Their deal is to create city-states and balkanization. And you all know what has happened to other countries such as France and certainly Cyprus and certainly Canada. I lived in Quebec when they were trying to separate. It was non-oui. There was unbelievable tension. And to this day, in Canada, there's great tension between Quebec, the French-speaking portion, and the rest of the country. It simply causes this kind of consequence. So please understand that it's easy to destroy a country, and Governor Lamb stated it right there, create this bicultural, multilingual, bilingual, and even multicultural society, and we have found that they just simply don't work. Number two, Lamb continued on how to destroy America. Invent multiculturalism and encourage immigrants to maintain their own culture. I would make it an article of belief that all cultures are equal, that there are no cultural differences. I would make it an article of faith that the black and Hispanic dropout rates are due to prejudice and discrimination by the majority. Every other explanation is out of bounds. Now, Stan, I'm a former teacher here in Colorado, and just last spring, May, there was a 5-year study of the 1999 eighth graders went into Denver Public Schools, and at the end of the study, only 65% of them dropped out or flunked out. There was ladies and gentlemen, this is, in effect, it's in Rocky Mountain News, May the 16th. And it's called What Happened. You can go online and find it if you'd like, or just email me. And what happened is that there were 40 different languages. There were 30,000 different illegal alien students in the classrooms in DPS. And one out of five teachers quit every 9-month cycle or transferred out of the Denver Public Schools because the chaos, the violence, the strife, and the non-determination of all of these illegal aliens caused so much of a nightmare. And so that only 35% of all those kids, here's the numbers, 5,663 kids started the Denver Public Schools in 1999 of September. Only 1,884 graduated. Now, that's indicative of what's happening across the nation. So what you're seeing is that multiculturalism and multilingualism does not work because you cannot educate all these different languages and you cannot educate your own children. And so they're literally running from the schools. And, of course, even the ones that graduated, can you imagine the very poor education that they received because of the kind of attention in the classrooms? And anyone can see Los Angeles right now, where average half of 16-year-olds can't even read a bus schedule. If you look what's going on in Miami, Florida, Chicago, Houston, Dallas, New York. New York's no longer an American city. It's got more foreign tongues and so little education or educated citizens that really it is a crisis. And as these 4 million immigrants arrive each year, so fast and so many, they are not just
hold right there, please.
Thank you.
have. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Frosty.
Thank you, Stan. Immigrants arrive at over 4 million per year so fast and so many that they are not assimilating into the American dream. However, they are creating the American nightmare for Americans. You would be insulted if you spoke, this is no kidding, English, and you're not welcome in immigrant enclaves in those cities. Los Angeles right now, which I visited recently, absolutely is no longer America. It is a colony of Mexico. And essentially, the Mexicans are, through Reconquista de Azatlan, are literally colonizing the southern four border states back into Mexico with all the crime, with all the drugs, with all the poverty, with all the diseases and all the consequences that are of Mexico. And if I can make this one point, along with Lamb's point on the speech here on number two, is the fact that corruption becomes a mechanism by which third world countries like Mexico operates. And so the people manifest those corruptions in every vector, every sector, and every level of society. And we've got 9 million illegal alien Mexicans in America right now. The kinds of corruption going on are a forgery of green cards, forgery of Social Security cards, forgery of birth certificates, forgery and or not even using driver's licenses or applying for any kind of insurance, of course, stolen cars. In Phoenix, Arizona, just a year and a half ago, 57,600 cars were stolen in the Phoenix area. It is now the carjacking capital of the world. Here in Colorado, in Greeley, the illegal alien hiring capital of Colorado, 270 hit and runs. We had seven deaths by Coloradans who were killed by seven illegal aliens. We had eight rapes up in Boulder by eight illegal aliens who fled back. Many of you heard about Donnie Young getting killed. So what you're seeing is a breakup of the American cohesiveness as a society. Number three.
But I think we have to point out that there really are people in Washington, D.C. who are encouraging this, mm-hmm. including yep. our president, including yep. here in California, our governor, who says, yep. why build a fence? Why? They can build a tunnel underneath it. Why build a fence? You know, we don't have to do this sort of thing. There are people who really want to destroy America. And when you understand that, it all makes sense. If you don't understand that, none of it makes sense. They are dedicated to the destruction of our national sovereignty and the creation of a world government. Once you understand that, everything fits into place.
And I would also bring to your attention that I've traveled throughout the world, almost 100 countries, and this one world government and this globalism thing, it has to reduce first world countries down to the level of poverty.
Hold right there. Well, go ahead. Go right ahead there, Frosty.
One thing about globalism and a one-world government, it must degrade the societies of all the first world countries down to the level of third world countries. And I want you to understand this very seriously. Mexico pays its normal workers about $3.85 per day. And the kind of, if you go into Mexico City, I would estimate on my last trip down there, between 4 and 5 million people live in cardboard shacks without water, without electricity, without toilets, and they actually go take their constitutional in the morning with the chickens. I've seen poverty that most people can't even comprehend in this country, but it's a norm in third world countries. And the corruption in Mexico is down to the marrow, and it's at all levels. And so the kind of one-world government and this globalism that they're trying to do is literally going to reduce America's standard of living and quality of life to that of Mexico. And this kind of socialism, if you will literally create the lowest common denominator for all of us, and everything that you and I'm 60 years old, and that everything in you and I have appreciated in our lifetimes, the American dream, will not be there for our children. Next point. We could make the United States an Hispanic Quebec without much effort. The key is to celebrate diversity rather than unity. As Benjamin Schwartz said in the Atlantic Monthly, the apparent success of our own multi-ethnic and multicultural experiment might have been achieved not by tolerance but by hegemony. Without the dominance that once dictated ethnocentrically and what it meant to be an American, we are left with only tolerance and pluralism to hold us together. if you look what's happened to France, it is no longer France. It's becoming France Arabia, and the immigrants, Muslims, of course, are not assimilating, don't speak French, could care less, and are actually creating another kind of a third world country, much like the third world countries there in the Middle East. And so they're literally taking the, in fact, they're forcing their old ways, too. That particular religion is out of the dark ages, and the things that they do, which is total subjugation of their women, female genital mutilation, stoning of women who they don't like for cultural reasons or whatever, the total inequity, the theocracy that has nothing to do with, of course, democratic forms of government or constitutional republics. They will bring them back, and as you can see what's happening in those countries that are starting to be dominated, it is a nightmare. Now, Lamb went on, and his third point here, I would encourage all immigrants to keep their own language and culture. This is how to destroy America. I would replace the melting pot metaphor with the salad bowl metaphor. It is important to ensure that we have various cultural subgroups living in America reinforcing their differences rather than, as Americans, emphasizing their similarities. Ladies and gentlemen, if you looked at Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Denver, Colorado, and just the last month, you saw tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens marching lawlessly in the streets, and what flag were they waving? They were waving the Mexican flag. There were a lot of Korean flags. There were Chinese flags. This is the kind of recipe that Lamb talked about in his speech, whereby these are no longer immigrants trying to become part of America, but actually separating themselves from America.
And I think it's so important. He's saying how to destroy America. He's not saying this is what he wants. This is what he would do if he wanted to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave.
That's exactly correct. And, you know, and just give you some examples. 2 years ago in Holland, Muslims killed Theo van Gogh because he offered an expose film on the brutality brought to bear against Muslim women by their husbands. This year, of course, the Dutch closed their borders to further immigration. And I talked to a Dutch lady just last summer on my bike trip through Europe, and I traveled with her for 5 days. She was a teacher, and she said, you can appreciate within 3 to 5 years, Holland will be at civil war. It'll be us against the immigrants. And of course, their society is at risk. And of course, France, you all know, is really at risk and is probably toast. The French will no longer be the French because the kinds of consequences. And of course, this is happening in Germany. It's certainly happening in Italy. It's happening in Australia. Although just recently they said, if you don't like representative parliamentary law, you Middle Easterners that are going to give us a hassle, we invite you to go back to your countries where the theocracy is what you want. You can have it there, but you cannot have it here in Australia. So they did stand up. Number four, I would make our fastest growing demographic group the least educated. I would add a second underclass, unassimilated, undereducated, and antagonistic to our population. I would have the second underclass have a 50% dropout rate from high school. That's how to destroy America. And as Lamb said in this thing on how to destroy America, his plan, just look across the nation. Look at the dropout and flunkout rates. Half of America's African Americans drop out of high school by 16. Somewhere between 60 and 70% of the illegal alien Hispanics and even American Hispanics drop out of high school by 16. And even before 16, their brains were somewhere else. Their educational determination. And I've taught in the inner city. I've taught in the classrooms in Colorado with half Hispanic classrooms. One of the things that we were forced to do back in the 70s was pass these kids, these minorities, up to the next grade. And what they did is called affirmative action grading and affirmative action passing, is they found out that they could get passed to the next grade by doing absolutely no homework, no classwork, no effort whatsoever academically. They played the system and graduated functionally illiterate. And again, how can a constitutional republic that's a very delicate form of government survive a highly uneducated population? And then, of course, think of what happens to those kids. they generally have babies by the time the girls are having babies by 14, 15, 16, and those kids go on welfare. The crime is extraordinary. The fathers don't pay, and the fathers, of course, are either on unemployment or working off the books, not contributing to the society. So you see it multiplies itself in consequences. And therefore, that point four by Governor Lamb shows you how we're destroying America. Look around you, ladies and gentlemen, and you are seeing that kind of damage, that kind of situation. And as a matter of fact, Tina Grigo, who is the Rocky Mountain News, and I know this woman personally, she's an advocate for illegal immigration. She writes fluff pieces on it all the time. And she's and this last November the 15th, she wrote, North High School teachers estimate only half the student body of 1,400 regularly attend classes, unquote. How many of you see that happening in your classrooms across this nation? So much so that many parents are even homeschooling now, or private school, or the ones that can't do that are just suffering and their kids are just getting trashed at schools. And the problem is that the school system suffers hundreds of thousands, millions of illegal alien kids who can't speak English and arrive from functionally illiterate parents. They can't perform academically because their parents have no interest or background in viable educational processes. And that's the way it is in the third world. Education is not important down in Mexico. It certainly isn't important in Central America, and in most of the countries of South America, it's not important. The average kid is lucky to get a fifth, sixth grade education. Those kids think a remote control takes the place of homework, and I know because I was a former teacher. And, of course, the same thing's happening in California, where there are over 100 different languages, and California is growing by about 1,500 people per day. So, again, we are facing a consequence that is so great and growing so huge. And if I may, Stan, let me bring this point to bear with all the listeners out there. Back in 1855, Mark Twain said, the shabbiest of all lies is silent assertion. What is silent assertion? It is when leaders and the media and the press stand around watching a bad thing happen or even supporting it with and obfuscating it. Well, it grows. In his time, of course, it was slavery. In our time, it's mass immigration, where the Ford Foundation, where the President of the United States, where the Congress are actually aiding and abetting it to the destruction of all that we have built up in this great country. And that's the kind of thing that we're literally bringing down upon ourselves, and American citizens are watching it happen before their eyes. And for the most part, 50% of Americans don't vote in national elections, 90% don't vote in local elections, and so what you now have is men like John McCain and the Good Old Boy Network and all of them working and literally putting their legs in the same pair of pants, they swim in the same pool, and the rich get richer, and the rest of us pay the difference, and they always say they're doing jobs Americans won't do, yeah, at a living wage, and they're cutting America's and Americans' poor class right into the welfare lines and the unemployment lines, and really, we're all paying a severe price while a few get rich. Number five, Lamb's points for destroying America. And he says, and I quote, my fifth point for destroying America would be to get big foundations and businesses to give these efforts lots of money. I would invest in ethnic identity, and I would establish the cult of victimology. I would get all minorities to think their lack of success was the fault of the majority. I would start a grievance industry blaming all minority failure on the majority population, unquote. If you look around you, you've got all these different safety nets. I mean, you've got every kind of minority safety net you can imagine. You've got everybody pushing to give the minorities this break, that break, more money, every kind of everything. And the rest of us are the ones that go to work and make the society work. The example, look at New Orleans. Literally, that was the socialist dream down there. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people lived there on welfare. And while a few elites in high places make billions, they corrupt America's rule of law and undermine the middle class. And if you notice one thing, ladies and gentlemen, the third world countries do not sustain a middle class. They suffer high class and they suffer a low class. America moves in that direction every day with this immigrant invasion, which is also facilitated by your own president, who is a globalist, and who is absolutely advocating for dissolving our borders. George W. Bush, of course, we all know, has never really worked in his life. He owned baseball teams, and he was the head of an oil company. His father gave him the name, and he simply was not that much of anything other than the fact that he partied a lot from the age of 18 through 40, and then he became a governor, not such a good one. And now, truly, if you know anything about the Peter Principle, I personally think, since I'm his age and I studied hard and carried a 3.8 average and back in college, the man is now showing what happens when you don't apply yourself. But unfortunately, he's the President of the United States, and we're the ones paying for it. And this is a great social experiment, and we are the ones that are probably going to lose our country. Number six, the plan for destroying America. My sixth plan for destroying a downfall of America would include dual citizenship and promote divided loyalties. I would celebrate diversity over unity. I would stress differences rather than similarities. Diverse people worldwide are mostly engaged in hating each other, that is, when they are not killing each other. A diverse, peaceful, or stable society is against most historical precedent. People undervalue the unity it takes to keep a nation together. Look at the ancient Greeks, and I quote, "The Greeks believed that they belonged to the same race. They possessed a common language and literature, and they worshiped the same gods. All Greece took part in the Olympic Games. A common enemy, Persia, threatened their liberty. Yet all these bonds were not strong enough to overcome two factors, local patriotism and geographic conditions that nurtured political divisions." Guess what happened? Greece fell. In fact, I rode exactly where that... I walked where Alexander the Great walked this last summer. In that historical reality, if we put the emphasis on the pluribus instead of the unum, we can balkanize America as surely as Kosovo. And, of course, anyone can appreciate this because I remember hearing a Cuban militant in Miami say, "Before we got here, Miami was nothing," unquote. Today in Miami, you would be insulted if you're an American. Point blank reality is Miami is no longer an American city. Neither is Los Angeles, and every city in America is under assault. Corruption reigns supreme along the growing third world momentum. Mexico's Vicente Fox dictates his wishes in our country by spreading the fraudulent matricular ID card while promoting 56 Mexican consulates in our major cities. And they are pushing for the Mexican language to be absolutely manifested throughout. And that's the kind of consequences we're facing. Well, these illegal aliens and immigrants are sending $60 billion a year, that's B as in boy, back to their home countries. And I can break that down for you. It's $20 billion back to Mexico. I think it's the second or first largest money maker for them. So in other words, his poorest of poor, undermining our country, our laws, our income tax systems, and literally feeding him $20 billion per year. And he has the ninth largest economy in the world. And even with all that corruption and 22 billionaires in Mexico, the people live in utter misery and squalor. The next point, next to last, number seven by Lamy says, "I would place all subjects off limits. Make it taboo to talk about anything against the cult of diversity. I would find a word similar to heretic in the 16th century that stopped discussion and paralyzed thinking. Words like racist or xenophobe halt discussion and debate." If you look about you today, the first thing that the pro-illegal immigration lobbies and the La Raza and Maldive and Mecha, Chirla and Lulac all yell and scream is racism, racism, racism. That's all they talk about. When in fact, this country has just the most amazing of capacity to take in all of these different ethnic groups, and everyone, if they went back to their own countries, they would have such a miserable life, whereas here they have quite a fantastic life because of the U.S. Constitution. And yet, this is what's going on, and that's why they literally keep screaming racism so that they can gain more and greater numbers. And the only consequence we will know is that once they take over, will we have any chance to call racism as they literally by sheer numbers colonize our country? And then he brings the next last point here. Having made America a bilingual, bicultural country, having established multiculturalism by the rule of law, having the large foundations fund the doctrine of victimology, Lamb said, "I would next make it impossible to enforce our immigration laws." I would develop a mantra that because immigration has been good for America, it must always be good. I would make every individual immigrant sympatric and ignore the cumulative impact of millions of them on America, unquote. Of course, in the end, he said in the last minute of the speech, Lamb wiped his brow and a profound silence swept the room where I sat. Finally, he said, lastly, I would censor Victor Davis Hanson's book, Mexifornia. His book is dangerous. It exposes the plan to destroy America. If you feel America deserves to be destroyed, don't read that book.
And, of course, we've actually interviewed him. It's a fascinating interview.
Yes, indeed. He's a fascinating man.
All right. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Frosty to wrap up the program here. But, Frosty, do you have a... How can people get your material?
Yeah, so they can go to FrostyWooldridge.com, but I also urge everyone to join www.numbersusa.com and become a weekly faxer of pre-written letters. It's free to join. Over 30,000. Okay, I'll be right back.
Okay, Frosty, go ahead and finish up your thought.
Yes, okay, and that's numbersusa.com. I also have become a member of that, and then over 1.4 million faxes go in every month now, and Roy Beck's my personal friend. It's extraordinary. Go and you'll see what your senators are doing. It'll educate you. My website, frostywooldridge.com, Wooldridge.com, D-R-I-D-G-E, will give you a 26-point action letter that you can pass to all your friends, because, ladies and gentlemen, we're in for a fight of our lives here. And it's going to take counter-critical mass of Americans actively participating in this great republic, or at some point we may lose it very quickly. And if I can bring you to the last part of these four aspects here shortly, I added in my book, remember this, George Orwell in 1984 in a story said, the three slogans are engraved in the Ministry of Truth, war is peace. Well, think about what George Bush is doing over there in Iraq right now. Freedom is slavery. Think of the Patriot Act, what's going on with that. And ignorance is strength. See how he is obfuscating and everyone is clouding over the realities of what's happening to this country. And you have much like 1984 with George Orwell. And in this particular language, in this group that I was in, it dawned on everyone at the conference that our nation and the future of this great republic are deeply in trouble and worsening fast. An invasion of diseases, cultural clashes, languages, balkanization, mounting environmental dilemmas accelerate by the day. If this immigration monster isn't stopped very soon, it will rage across America like a California wildfire and destroy everything in its path, especially the American dream. The other four points, ladies and gentlemen, are number one, we have a water crisis that's going to be so great that it'll be irreversible and unsolvable here in the West. California is going to add 20 million people within 30 years. Arizona will add over 5 million people. In 20 years, by 2025, which is less than that, Texas will add 12 million by the current rate of immigration-driven growth, and here in Colorado between 4 and 6 million people. We will not have the water. Number two, the diseases coming across, 16,000 cases of Mycobacterium tuberculosis have crossed on unscreened bodies of illegal aliens in the last 4 years, and it kills 2 million annually, and the average illegal alien will spread it to between 10 and 50 American citizens depending on public contact. Where do illegal aliens work? Well, food, fast food, hotel, construction, they're right behind you at the movies, coughing and hacking.
Frosty, you're going to have to hold that. We'll be back in just a moment here. Oh, go ahead. We've got...
Alrighty.
All right. If we're going to have to let you go here. Two more points. Make them quickly, would you?
Yeah, and of course, the diseases are just extraordinary. 7,000 new cases of leprosy in the last 3 years. Tens of thousands of cases of hepatitis A. Chagas disease, which is extraordinarily nasty. And then number three, of course, is the crime. MS-13 gangs have come into this country, probably some in excess of 20,000 members, extortion, killing cops, and distributing the $128 billion worth of drugs coming across the Mexican border. And number four, ladies and gentlemen, or the 12th point, is the fact that this immigration is driving into this country because 85 million people are added to the planet every year now. They're desperately poor. 8 million starve to death. They all want to come to America, and these countries are simply pushing them out because there's no way to sustain them. And so we can expect 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 million, 200 million, in fact, over 300, or a doubling of the U.S. population by 2065, so that we will be as miserable as they are in China, as miserable as India, and as miserable as they are in Bangladesh. And the real crisis is that global warming, species extinction, acid rain, all of the consequences brought by sheer numbers, we're all, our children, and I've said it before, the more extreme our numbers, the more extreme our children's consequences.
God bless you, Frosty. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope we can get you on our other programs. That was a great, great presentation.
Thank you. My honor, my pleasure, and God bless.
And you too. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Frosty Wolditz. I hope you enjoyed it. If you can, understanding that everything he says is absolutely true, and the message we keep trying to get out. And then, of course, behind everything that's going on, there is a conspiracy, and we're going to be talking at the conspiracy conference, which is going to be held over in Santa Clara at the Hyatt Regency on the weekend, Memorial Day weekend, May 27th, May 28th. Now, if you'd like to know more about it, go to their website, and that's, of course, conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com, or you can call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. I'll be speaking. Jim Mars will be there. John DeCamp, Will Thomas, we've had on. Ted Gunderson. It'll be a fascinating time. It'll be 2 days. Hope you can be able to make it. Well, then, of course, we want to remind our listeners Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent on you to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, trying to get you to understand that America is under attack, and we're under attack because we have people in our government who hate America, who are dedicated to a globalist dream. And behind that are dark spiritual forces. If you have not read my book or seen my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. And then, of course, we have a more lengthy presentation called The Secrets of the Illuminati. That's The Secrets of the Illuminati, and all of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know more about the plan to control the population of our country and kill off 90% of the world's population, that the talk is entitled Planned Population Reduction. Planned Population Reduction. Don't scoff and say it can't be, it can't be true. Check the facts. Find out if it really is true. And then, of course, we give you our number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, we're going to lose America. And pray for our leaders. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.